Next, I have another poet up for you. His name is Mac Ivey, and I know Mac from the Noon Poets, and I think this is a special treat because I think he's one of the funniest poets and one of the most interesting poets that I've ever heard. And I think, Mac, you say you only started writing very recently. Is that right, or were you kidding me? You said that you only started writing recently, but I'm wondering if you were kidding me.
True.
Yeah, well, thank you. Please give a warm welcome to Mac Ivey.
You have to have some excuse. Good afternoon. Good to see so many people here. I see some of my friends out there, too. And I hope after all this is over that we're still friends. I write all over the place. I have a fairly short attention span, so I can't keep on one subject too long. The first poem I want to read will be about loneliness. Take a look at the word lonely. I've written it here on the front of you, those of you who can see it. Picture it in your mind, if you will, while I read this poem called Take Another Look at Lonely. When sky puts its on its slate gray face and cold winds cut bone deep, when no one calls me by name or says hello or touches me, the word lonely says it all. Such a sad sound the word makes. Its letters all hum the same dark tune. Watch the two L's rise, tall and aloof, above the lettery rabble. They distance themselves at or near the word's poles. It's clear they want to be alone. Squeeze between the two L's, a one hunkers down, hemmed in, bitter, unhappy with its fate. Can you hear the moan in lonely? Hear what's being said by onely. If you drop to E, see the only. Not exactly words that draw a crowd. Finally, at the end of it all, stuck there in but last place, taking two lines, taking off in different directions, going their separate ways, just like the rest of us. The next one is a childhood memory that I have that's pretty sharp, and I hope you'll enjoy it, called Learning the Finer Points of Life. That night was special, my first time to eat with the grown-ups at the big table on company night. Everything was clean, everything polished, not a crumb anywhere. The tablecloth was gleamy white. Under the good sterling lay just so. For our centerpieces, roses were mixed with daisies in a silver bowl. A mountain of crispy chicken was piled high on a platter in front of Dad. I remembered my manners and used the right forks, chewed slow with mouth closed, put butter on a small plate, and spoke to guests only when they spoke to me. After the meal, I learned that when company is here, you don't pick up chicken and eat it with your fingers. And you definitely never, ever, ever pass your bones to Dad to pick clean. I attend a friends meeting here in Chapel Hill, the Quaker meeting. It's an unprogrammed meeting, silent meeting. And the important focus is to be quiet, settle down, center yourself, and try to get in touch with your inner light, as we call it. That's a very important part of the process. And this happened to me one Sunday. I call it Sunday worship. Head bowed, I cleared my mind, Then in front of me, beneath the meeting bench, a big black shiny ant appeared. Six thin legs pumping up and down. He scooted among and around all those shoes that loomed over him. Was he lost? This place was not safe for ants. One wrong move, one shoe shuffle, and he would be history, squished, squashed, smeared. Oblivious to all these prospects, the daredevil swerved left, poked around, then veered right, then swung back again. What was he looking for? I doubt that even he knew. Next, he chanced a brown shoe, then the black one next to it, neither to his taste nor with his smell. Finally, he scampered off out of view, gone for good, it seemed. I wished him luck among all those shoes. Again, I cleared my mind and sought to settle down. But, much to my dismay, that ant came back, still looking, still poking, still not finding what he wanted. It was a bad Sunday for both of us. This is fun. One time I was walking through a garden, a wild, messy-looking place. I ran across a snake, and the thing spoke to me, and I could understand every word it said, and it told me a story. And I put it to poetry. It's called Snake Says We Got It All Wrong. Way back they fingered a snake like me for leading Eve off the primrose path. Well, that's a pile of dog goo, you know. Do those Bible bangers really think women are so dumb that even snakes can pull the wool over their eyes? Some pretty pious dudes slink and wink, waiting to put you down when they get the chance. Remember, that old snake never conned Eve. They just talked about options. Besides, what's wrong with a little temptation? Why, you would still be marking time in that piddling park, naked, dumb, twiddling your thumbs, if they hadn't done that fruit. Don't be taken in by those amen types. They slipped that old snake a bum rap. Instead, check out why the head honcho made that fruit such a no-no. Check out why he put shades on that guy and gal. Was this Mr. Big a stingy dude who wouldn't share the franchise? In your spare time away from TV, mull it over, spin it around. And if you get the itch, let me know. We can do this talk thing anytime, anywhere. Oh, yes, I can be reached at www.fruit.com. I write a lot of poems about stories in Genesis, and here's one that's my take on Eve's first few days. I call it Eve's first pro quid pro. Eve was not a happy camper when she shivered awake her first dawn, not knowing who or what it was laid out warm next to her. She did a double take when she saw his dark hair speckled white with lice, watched the jerky twitch, heard the pig-like snore, smelled his foul odor. Soon she roused up and fled, going towards sweet smells of honeysuckle and blue curl blooms, where she made a bed under a willow tree. For days he tagged after her, close as a shadow, tugging on arm and hair, smiling, talking, eating nuts and berries she gathered. Despite his pleas, she refused to move to his place, until he promised to get in water and scrub himself clean. It was the first give and take between a man and a woman, hard maybe on a male who began with no need to bargain, but harder still on a female who started with no real leverage. It may have been a no-brainer at the time, but she didn't comprehend yet the high price of deals, kept or not kept. Several years ago, I read a Sunday newspaper. It was a long article about a poll or a study they'd done. And all the numbers I use in this poem came out of that article. I think it's a poem that I'm going to read to you. It's called Sex After 65. One Sunday afternoon, I sat in my rocking chair to read all the news fit to print. Much to my surprise, in front of God and everybody, that paper told me of a study they had done. A sex poll is what they called it. Poll spelled with two L's and no E, if you please. They said they quizzed 1,600 people, men and women, from 65 to 95. I wondered about that some. How many people did they ask before 1,600 people agreed to lie? How many 95s even heard them ask how often, how long, how good it was? But I digress. Back to that poll. I read with interest that old folks needn't despair, for on average, they do it 2.5 times a month. Although the number might be right, I really don't understand that half. Did that mean they went halfway and then lost steam? Then I wondered about that too. Was that a whole bunch of halves or even less? God forbid. I didn't even want to think about it. I was never good at fractions. But if it were up to me, I'd suggest twice 1 month and 3 times the next. On average, 2.5 times each month. That'd be a whole lot better than the fewer the fractions we have to handle, the better off we'll be. But I digress, back to that poll. I was also surprised to learn that among the young, the preliminaries, warm-ups I call them, went on for 39 minutes, while the oldies reached the starting line in 30 minutes flat. Ooh, pardon the pun. And once things got going good, the young stayed that way 17 minutes, while the old folks finished in 12. All this seems so ridiculous. Who's going to watch a clock while all this is going on? So, what's the real poop? Are the old folks really quicker, faster? You know, maybe there's more here than the eye can see, and maybe that's the way it ought to be. Okay, I'm going to finish you off with one that is a glom-glom of the Genesis stories, all of them put together, some of them put together. How it really was. Everyone pines for the good old days when life was so wonderful. Well, excuse me, when was it ever that way? Even the Bible tells us right off the bat, Adam and Eve got sacked for snagging fruit at the company store. Remember their kids? Right off the bat, Cain popped Abel. I asked you, how dysfunctional can a family get? And that was only openers. Abraham almost chopped up and stir-fried his own boy. Jacob dressed in drag and conned his old man. Then there's Lot, who got his daughters in a lot of trouble. Stuff even soaps won't touch. Friend, I'm telling you right now, nothing's changed. Nothing.
I love that, Mac. That's so great.